Good morning, everybody. Sorry for the delay. Representative Hornstein, chair of the Transportation Finance Committee, and my colleague, Senator Dibble, chair of the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee in the Senate. We'd like to reconvene the Conference Committee on House File 1444. Our agenda for today is roughly as follows. We will take testimony on the amendment that was presented yesterday, very brief testimony. We've had a lot of discussion about the truck weight issue, and we don't need to belabor it, but we have a possible compromise amendment on the table, and so we'd like to get very quick testimony from the public. We'll take a very short recess for the House to finalize its response to this amendment, and after that, we will start to take some public safety amendments that's part of this funding package, and hopefully that takes us into the afternoon, and then we'll start to address some of the smaller finance issues that are in this bill, and hopefully by the end of the day, we'll be pretty much have the outlines of a bill with still the two outstanding items for revenue on the table, and of course, that's being discussed by others, as well as us. So with that, I know we have an amendment on the table. I don't know if everyone has their...
this one?
Did you want any say any opening comments, Chairman Dibble? I don't know. Go right in here.
So. Nope, I'm good. I follow my chair. Over, he tells me.
I don't know if that's such a good idea. Okay, so to refresh everybody's memory, this is the SCH 1444A27 amendment. And one of the things I'm interested in is on the House side, as the chair of the House delegation here, is to find out very specifically how this is a compromise. It's been discussed as a compromise, and I'm very open to compromise ideas on controversial issues, but what are people giving up? What's still on the table that we want to consider? And so with that, I would just, again, we'll be very cognizant of time. I understand that shortly after 11 we're going to have to recess, whether we like it or not, because this room is being used by others. And I know the House is going to be considering the bonding bill today, so there'll be a lot of stops and starts. So is there anyone that would like to testify briefly on the amendment? If not, we'll take a quick recess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Conference Committee. I'm Mike Wilhelm, Ewald Consulting, appearing on behalf of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. The amendment before you, we think, is a good compromise for a variety of reasons. First of all, it does address the concerns of the aggregate industry specific to their needs to have more competitive truck weights. This is going to result, we believe, in lower costs for the purchase of aggregate material. Also, very importantly, in crafting this and working with the Senate offer, we wanted to be clear that we were going to be consistent with the MnDOT report, and that was sort of a guiding principle for us in this that basically acknowledges that these trucks can be safe at certain rates, certain weights. Also, too, with the other portion of the amendment, you can see that it's broken out, that it covers on the first part of the amendment, covers aggregate products. It also covers products used in road construction. Mr. Werke gave that testimony yesterday that he believes that this will lower road construction costs for the state and for local governments. And then the other portion, we tied to the Jobs Creation Fund, the ability for the DOT to permit three businesses that are awarded Jobs Creation Fund from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the ability to have trucks that run at and receive overweight permits. Those are annual renewable permits, so if the business does not meet standards, those could potentially be revoked if they don't meet those standards. And we think this is a very high bar. First of all, in order to even be considered for an overweight permit, there will have to be a pretty solid contract with the state of Minnesota for jobs creation. So you can say that this language in the amendment before you would lead to the creation of more jobs in the state of Minnesota, and also an ability for the state and local folks to ensure that trucks were running operably, safely in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Briefly, Mr. Corrigan, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I just wanted to mention also that we did listen the other night to some of the testimony that was handled, and we did try to react to those concerns. Also in the language is a prohibition on trailer-mounted mixers that was brought up the other day. Of the 60,000 concrete mixers in the country, there are 200 that are trailer-mounted mixes. They're very specialized equipment, and I don't ever expect to see them, and didn't expect to see them in Minnesota, but we made sure that contingency was taken care of. I also want to just talk, because there appears to be some confusion about 10-ton roads and enforcement. I just want the committee members to understand the focus on 10-ton axles comes from the fact that when our trucks are stopped on the road, especially out on the road, the State Patrol is weighing axles. They're not weighing the truck. They're not weighing gross weight. They're not weighing axle weights. And we've tried, and you've been very attentive in listening to our testimony. But we wanted to make sure you understand that that's how the weight limits are enforced in the state. That's how the roads are engineered in the state. And these axles, as we've told you before, we believe put less, not more, pressure on the roads. And you've heard some controversy about that. Lastly, I just want to thank all of you for the work that you've put into this. Representative Beard heard truck weight bills in the last biennium. Representative Earhart heard the McNamara bill. And there was a companion in the Western, Senator Western, brought to this committee, was not heard. I wanted to thank Chair Dibble for his support of throughout these hearings, and certainly Senator Scoy, who sees the importance of, after putting 2,000 trucks in the year on the road, of these trucks on the road for by exception, that we're ready to take a policy discussion. And I also just want to recognize Gene Halverson, who's in the room, who's done so much work as an employee of the State Patrol and also in the MnDOT Permits Office on making sure that we got all of this information right. And lastly, I would really be remiss if I didn't say one of the reasons the trucking industry doesn't come to the table a lot of the time on this issue is because of the hard work they do to make this a safe industry in Minnesota, and they frankly are tired of hearing erroneous comments about truck safety in this state. We continue to lower the number of crashes in the state. We continue to lower the number of injuries. We continue to lower the number of fatalities, all reported in the crash report that you review every year. So I just wanted to make that point. This is a safe industry, despite what you've heard in the last week or two, and thank you all.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll make it brief because I know that we are pressed for time. Some of my questions will be around clarity. So I'm looking at subdivision 2A that talks about the six-axle and seven-axle vehicles serving qualifying businesses. So it's my read that, you know, each calendar year that the commissioner may designate three businesses that would qualify, and therefore, if those businesses qualify, then it's my understanding that they can go above the weight standard that the other trucks would, or am I reading that right or wrong, and can you clarify that, number one? And number two, when we think in terms of the permit, is the permit for the business and not necessarily for each truck? So a business that qualifies could have 10 trucks, but only, let's say, a $300 cost for a permit. So if you could answer those two questions, and then I have one follow-up question.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Senator Champion, let me take the second question first. The intention was that of the three businesses, first of all, they would have to have a contract with the state of Minnesota and also qualify under the warehousing or distribution facility center. That would be the purpose for their jobs creation fund grant. And it would be the business that receives the permit and be allowed to do that. They would essentially have to have their routes approved by MnDOT, the state agency, for running on the roads that they would run on.
And lastly, Mr. Chair?
Senator Champion.
And then I heard testimony from the gentleman sitting next to you, and I apologize for not catching your name. But you stated that by accepting this amendment and this compromise, that the trucking industry, that there's less and not more on the roadways. I think I heard you say that. And that there are less crashes based on empirical data or research or something that I'm sure that you will clarify for me. But have you done any work to determine what is the damage to the roadways as a result of having more trucks or trucks with higher weight limits on them, and where the funding should come from in order to repair roads if there's more damage?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Corrigan, briefly.
Again, we go to the MnDOT study for those studies. Those are called easel loads on the road, and that is the evidence that we use. MnDOT spent 2 years studying the impact of axles on pavements. I guess, Senator Champion, my answer to that question would be there's 2,000 of these trucks that have been permitted to run on these roads for the last 10 years now. We have no evidence that they create more or less damage. We believe if they were causing damage to roads and bridges, local governments would not issue these permits annually, which they continually do. We believe if there were safety issues in each of these counties that these trucks are permitted to run in, that they wouldn't receive a permit in the next year. So there is no evidence that these trucks create more. We believe they create less damage on the road surfaces. They create no bridge. There's been no instance of these trucks causing bridge damage, and there's no evidence that the crash rates are fact. In fact, overweight permits on the crash report in 2011 were 0.2% of the truck crashes. 0.2%. That's almost zero.
Representative Bernardi, and then I'd like to move on to other testimony.
Okay, thank you. I would like to make, and maybe it's not even to these testifiers, but I'd like to get clarification on the language that's on line, well, it's 2.1 to about 2.4, and because it seems counter to what was just testified, what the testimony was. This looks like that they will receive a renewal permit under the subdivision each year following issuance of the original permit if the permit holder continues to meet the requirements of a qualifying business. It didn't say anything about they wouldn't get a renewal if there was problems to the roads or to safety. It looks like it will just be an automatic renewal.
I don't know if the testifiers want to respond. Representative Beard, sounds like you have a
Mr. Chair, yeah, maybe. Excuse me, maybe I can shed a little light on that. Excuse me. About 10 years ago, we had members, a paper company, come to us and say, we're locked in. Our freight rates on the railroad are so high, we need to get 105,000 pounds, I think it was, to Duluth. And if you do this, we're going to build some new facilities and either Grand Rapids or Brainerd, I can't remember. So one of the first votes I took was to increase the weight limit exemption for that one commodity on that route. Excuse me. After they got the permit and the authority to do that, in statute, I might add, they went on hauling freight and never did build the factory, never did add the new jobs and all the other things they said they were going to do. So they didn't perform, but nonetheless, the exemption is in law to this day. They can haul 100-some-thousand-pound trucks. Is that US 2 runs across here? I can't remember. Something like that. So rather than do that on this, the way it was explained to me was these applications actually have to be approved by deed, I believe, or somebody in economic development, so that the permits renew every year, so that if they don't perform and they aren't adding new jobs and they aren't building distribution facilities in Fraser, for instance, they cannot get their permits the next year. We don't get ourselves into the situation we have now with an ongoing permit in law and no jobs were ever built as promised before getting that. Mr. Chair, I hope that it sheds a little light.
Just one follow-up. That sounds like it's a very good safeguard in this bill.
Yes.
It doesn't address the damage to the roads or the bridges. The permit would just be continued to give out each year. Go ahead.
Chairman Dibble.
Representative Bernardi, I don't think it just gives a blanket approval for the submission of the permit, even if the permit holder is a bad actor. If you read the first few words in that sentence, it says, upon submitting an acceptable application and paying the required fee, so the permit holder would continue to be subject to the ordinary permit standards. So even if they're, they've done bad things that would cause them to lose their permit, they would be caught by that language and wouldn't be entitled to the permit. This language wouldn't defeat that. I think the goal that Representative Beard described is the goal of this sentence, is making sure that these are folks who are generating jobs.
They don't perform.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm not sure exactly who to ask this of, and I think Mr. Willamy described it a little bit to me yesterday, but starting on line 2.18, it describes the qualifying business and designated by the Commissioner of Deed as a job creation fund business under 116J.8748. Can you tell me, that's, I think, what we're talking about here is if they remain qualified under that area of law. Can you tell me what that is? What is the details of remaining qualified?
Mr. Wilhelmy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, to remain qualifying, that is something that is done through the deed process through the Jobs Creation Fund. Essentially, there are performance requirements in the contract that would be signed between deed and the qualifying business for jobs creation, and they must be within compliance of that statute in order to continue being supported by the Jobs Creation Fund. And we basically piggybacked on that to ensure that we had the best possible actors, also that this was a renewable process for the state of Minnesota in terms of allowing the additional truck weights, and then basically ensuring that there was some coordination between DEED as they go forward and also with DOT by having this be an annual issue.
This was a program.
Okay, are there any other member questions?
To follow up, Mr.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, do we know what those are? There minimum basic requirements that are in statute, not knowing what's in there, what's written in there, and what is a contract. I guess I would like to know a little bit more what that is.
Okay. Maybe Mr. Peterson or somebody with familiarity with MnDOT's.
Mr. Chairman, this was in the legislation that I think passed the House and Senate in the last couple of days. So it was part of that bill, and we can get copies of that particular section, Senator, during a break, perhaps, if you'd like to review it then.
Chair is asking you. Looks like you have more information. Oh, sorry.
So that does. Ms. Berezovsky.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have
we'll confirmation. We're going to pause before we take action on this amendment anyways.
Yeah, we're not voting on this now. Clearly. Are there any other member questions for these panelists? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Testimony, I would assume, in opposition to the SCH 1444A27 amendment. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. I first of all want to thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members, to again address you. Obviously, we've had a lot of discussion about this issue, and certainly this amendment is still something that we have grave concerns with. All along our conversation has been about safety. It's been about damage to our roads, potential damage to our roads and jobs. We're concerned that this amendment, again, will create another carve-out. I would say, what about the others? We all know this is about Menards creating a facility, hoping to create a facility. What about Lowe's? What about Home Depot? They didn't get a shot to discuss whether this is a competitive advantage for their competitor. What about the mom-and-pop shops, your Ace Hardware that many of us shop at, the Hank's Hardware where I shop at? And, you know, Mr. Willoughby had just mentioned that they believe that they should we should be taking big consideration or really consider what the MnDOT report says. And I want to quote from the MnDOT report in one of the key findings, and I'm not going to go over the safety ones I said quoted the other day, but it specifically says in the key finding, the proliferation of exceptions, and tolerances in the weight laws creates inequities and adversely impacts enforcement and infrastructure. That is verbatim what they cite in their study. Members, you know, Senator Champion had kind of discussed this a little bit, had mentioned it, had asked about the permits. We're talking one company, or three companies in this case, will be able to file for a permit, a $300 or $500 permit, that will cover virtually every single vehicle that they could travel on. Now, I'm not talking about just one facility. This, if you create a new facility, allows you to use the same language in all of your facilities. There is no language in this bill that prohibits them or demands that they just keep this truck weight in and out of one facility. So in other words, Menards can build a facility in Frazee, but they can also build one in Farmington or in St. Paul and use the same language to circumvent and have a competitive advantage regarding other competitors. This is a great mistake if we go forward with this, and it's certainly some concerns that we have. You know, I passed out a couple handouts, and I know you guys have probably been inundated with a bunch of stuff, but this is one of them, and it's a rebuttal to what weight increase of weight does to our roads. But I also passed out a map. And I know it's kind of hard to read, but I wanted to make sure you guys had enough maps. These trucks will still be bound to our state, county, and local highways. They are still going to be prohibited from traveling on our federal highway system because that highway system is still going to be held at 80,000 pounds. So if you look at this map and you decide to go west, you got to go down Highway 10 or go over to Highway 10. You're going to go through Detroit Lakes, Audubon, Lake Park. If you go north, you're going to go to Highway 29 to Highway 34 to Highway 59, county highway and two state highways. You're going to go through Callaway, Omega, and Waubun, amongst many other cities. If you go east, you're going to go down to County Highway 29 to Highway 34 over to 200 and cut across possibly to Duluth, who knows where. You're going to go through Park Rapids, Nevis, Walker, Floodwood, and so on. If you go south, you're going to go to Highway 10. Which Highway 10, when I can change my hat right now, I'm also a Metropolitan Council member. And I can tell you in my district, in Highway 10, is one of the highest fatality rates as far as intersections in this state. And we're going to allow a truck weighing 99,000 pounds to go down that same route. It's also going to go through Perm, Wadena, Bertha, Long Prairie. I ask you, who's going to pay for the damage to these roads? Are we going to rely on these cities, these counties? I certainly know that we don't have state funding to fix these roads, which, again, cited by the key findings with the MnDOT study, specifically states that we need to address our problem roads before we really move forward. Finally, members, you know, as you know, this is a big issue for us. We're very concerned that this is a slippery slope. And eventually, the conversation is going to take place, well, why don't we just exempt everybody? Why just have a couple companies? I urge you, and I ask, and I plead, not only for the Teamsters Union, but for our general public. There is a report, a comprehensive study, that's going to be released in September of 2014 that is going to give us a comprehensive look and be able to provide an educated, provide you with an educated decision on what heavyweight trucks do to our roads. It's going to provide information with regards to accidents. It's going to provide information with regards to bridges. There should be no rush to this. Sure, you know, it may create a few jobs for Menards, but what about the residents of those cities that I just mentioned that will have to compete down their local roads and those state roads with these trucks weighing 99,000 pounds? It's a mistake, and it's an accident waiting to happen. We ask and we urge you to, and plead that you hold off to make this decision till September of 2014 in order to receive the information to allow you to make an educated decision as to what impact it will truly have in the state of Minnesota, our residents, and mostly your constituents. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, and I don't know how I follow that show. Wow. Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Let me just be very brief then. I gave you four reasons why this wasn't such a good idea the last time we spoke, and I appreciate that opportunity. But let me just, I want to elaborate on just two other quick things. This is a pattern. We do this regularly. There are folks sitting around this table who have been chairs of this committee, chairs of the Transportation Committee before, who have heard this and who have overseen various different carve-outs that we have done. There's not much left to the apple that hasn't been carved out, and indeed the legislation which you saw this year, the Senate language is kind of the ultimate carve-out. We just say heavier trucks for all freight. We're opposed to these various carve-outs, just as we're opposed to the overall piece of the overall apple that's being taken out. A couple of reasons. I thought there was some really good testimony yesterday, and if people heard what Margaret Donahoe said, she referenced the studies that were done over this last 9 months by the TFAC, and TFAC came to the conclusion that we've got $450 million worth of annual repair needs in the state of Minnesota to the roads we already have for the next 20 years. We're not talking about expanding it. You are sitting here struggling trying to figure out how to deal with that, let alone build out a transit system that we sorely need in this state as well. Mr. Reynoso has told you the economics of this particular bill. The second reason is, real quickly, we've got three companies that get this every year. What is fair about that? We could have picked two, we could have picked four, we could have picked whatever. What is the magic in three companies, and why should they receive permits to run vehicles and combinations of vehicles? If you read the statute closely, 2.6 vehicle or combination of vehicles, we're talking doubles and triples now, to run on the highways of Minnesota. Not the interstates, the highways of Minnesota. And why stop at three? Just having a little history with this, I'd suggest that stopping at three will be very, very difficult. And the evidence is in, as I said, the history. Representative Beard referenced a law passed by this legislature in 2006, which gave the Bland and Paper Company, UMP, the authority to run heavier trucks on Highway 2 between Grand Rapids and Duluth. That was in 2006, and it was conditioned, as the statute said, Laws of Minnesota 2006, Chapter 1, Article 4, Section 39. The sections effective August 1, 2006 are a date on which the commissioner determines that building permits have been issued for the construction of a new pulp and paper manufacturing facility in Grand Rapids. 2 years later, we came back and we struck that language. We struck the language that said the latter of August 1, 2006 are the date upon which the commissioner determines that building permits are issued. And in the Duluth paper, we had an explanation of what went on down here. It said essentially that the UPM paper mill in Grand Rapids received an extra benefit, new legislation that allows three-unit trucks to operate on US 2 corridor between Duluth and Grand Rapids. The trucks will carry 108,000 pounds. Three-unit truck design will need approval by the Department of Transportation. And then it goes on to explain what happened in the amendment. The use of the modified trucks on Highway 2 corridor was enacted by the legislature 2 years ago, but then conditioned upon the addition of a new paper machine at Blandin called Project Thunderhawk. Finland-based UPM which owns Grand Rapids Mill, showed little indication in recent months that the expansion would proceed in the near future, even though needing permitting for Thunderhawk is largely in place. The new Highway 2 corridor truck weight allowance is no longer dependent upon Project Thunderhawk. That's the history, and you will be faced with this question time and again. We'd suggest you not take this step this time around. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there questions for either Mr. Appitz or Mr. Reynoso? I see additional testifiers emerged at the table. Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, good morning, committee members. I'm Philip Qualley with United Transportation Union. UTU is the exclusive representative of the trainmen's contract nationwide. We'll be very brief. We have not testified on this before, but heard very, very good testimony, and we do have some concerns. First of all, let me be very clear. This will cost railroad jobs. We do oppose this legislation. We see a loss of railroad employment for train crews out of Waseca DM&E terminal because they're working west towards South Dakota border and with aggregate business, as well as Wilmer Terminal, BNSF, with aggregate business on rail southwest towards Sioux City, potentially at Worthington on the Union Pacific. I am a railroad worker. I am not a truck driver, and there are many, many people in this room and experts smarter than I am when it comes to trucking and road business. However, I was struck by testimony on April 8th from a truck driver that talked about the railing effect of multiple axle trucks. And with all due respect to Cambridge Systematics and the great work that MnDOT has done in studying this, as a heavy machinery operator, I recognize that physical characteristic of a piece of equipment that is out of control. And we have to keep in mind that these machines are being operated on different types of pavement grade and different types of weather, and driver fatigue must be considered. Finally, I will just close that I'm concerned about the road wear on bridges and that the heavy trucks may cause more circuitous routing around the state to reach destinations to avoid already damaged bridges. And finally, I do think that the legislature needs to seriously consider the policy question here of shifting more heavy freight away from rail to pavement. I'm mindful that there are issues with shipping rates and fair shipping rates in our industry. However, this is a big policy question. This state has gone, and I will close, Mr. Chairman, this state has gone from ox and pambina carts to rail to truck. And now when there's new technologies available in rail service that may improve rail service and preserve our road surfaces in the future, we're talking about increasing truck weights. I simply ask the legislature to take this responsibility very seriously about the policy questions of shifting more heavy freight away from rail. Thank you very much for listening to my comments, and please oppose this legislation. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Beard.
Just a couple comments. Again, if we're going to make a decision, and this is an important policy decision, I agree with Mr. Qualley. I just want to be sure we're doing it with accurate representation. The inference was made that there could be triples. Members, there are no triples in Minnesota. In fact, in all the legislation that I've seen in the 10 years here, there was a brief attempt at maybe lengthening truck lengths, and that went down thoroughly repudiated. The truck lengths do not change. Triples do not happen. If they're talking three combinations, you're talking tractor and maybe two trailers, but again, that would be limited to 228s or a tractor and 153. Just to be clear, the other one is somebody said these heavy trucks, if they happen, if these increases happen under this freight exemption for deed, that we'll be putting trucks through people's jurisdictions and running them over weak bridges, and they won't have anything to say about it. If you read a little further down to lines 2.27, 2.8, and 2.34, whatever we did, even with the other carve-outs for sugar beets, sweet corn, paper, and everything else we've exempted over the years, they are subject to seasonal load restrictions. They are subject to the bridge load limits. And believe it or not, there are bridges that are stronger than the 10-ton limit out there. And on 2.34, the permit from each road authority having jurisdiction. So if they should run over a township road, the township official has to issue a permit for their portion of the route. So these will be routed. And again, without speaking to whether we want to do this or not, I just want to be sure we're dealing accurately, members, that they aren't going to be running willy-nilly down township roads and taking shortcuts through small towns and collapsing culverts and things like that. These are actually very specifically prescribed. One last comment, Mr. Chair, since we talked about studies and who has a dog in the fight, I would submit that Mr. Halverson does not have a dog in the fight, and if anyone has made sure that the data was what MnDOT made their recommendations from, Mr. Halverson would be that person. So I have confidence in the data that they put together. And, oh, by the way, if you haven't seen the truck testing facility up on Interstate 94 towards Monticello, you ought to take the tour, because a lot of enormously useful data for use all across the country comes from MnDOT and from that facility. Thank you for letting me make those comments.
Representative Beard, thank you. You read my mind. I felt that Representative Bernardi raised some important questions, and I feel that perhaps Mr. Halverson is the best person to address those. So is he in the room? Okay.
I saw the smiling face.
If there's no further questions, thank you to this panel. And then I believe we are going to need to leave shortly. So if we'll physically need to leave the room and recess shortly. But Mr. Halverson, to anything that you've heard, but particularly to answer Representative Bernardi's question, which I thought was a good one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gene Halverson from MnDOT. Just a couple of things that I jotted down. We have never issued any 108,000-pound permits to Blandon. They have never applied for any. We've never issued any. There are no triple trailers, as Representative Beard said. There's a long combination vehicle freeze that's federal. Even if we wanted to, we could not allow triple trailers. These trucks are no bigger than the trucks that are already out there. These weights have been allowed under permit since 2004 with the timber products. They are lighter axle weights. The 90,000-pound six-axle truck is 1,000 pounds lighter per axle than the common 80,000-pound five-axle semi that's out there. Representative Bernardi, I believe to answer your question, as I read this, the three companies would have to get the permit and deed to be allowed to operate, and then they would need a permit from MnDOT for each truck that they wanted to operate at these higher weights with the increased axles. With that, any other questions that I could answer, Mr. Chairman?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Halverson. So there were concerns raised, which I share, about safety and condition of roads. You heard the testimony. Can you comment on any of that?
Mr. Chairman, as far as I know from MnDOT and speaking with the materials lab engineers, this has not caused any damage to roads. Bridges were the fees that are collected for this go into a bridge signing and inspection account. So that money has been used to inspect all the bridges in Minnesota, not only MnDOT's bridges, but county bridges, township bridges. And if need be, this money provides for posting of those bridges. And yes, there are some bridges that are posted that these weights cannot operate on. Representative Beard was right in reading of this statute that they would have to follow the bridge postings. They have to follow the bridge formula, which is 169.824. You'll see that in here. And that is the federal weights per axle that are allowed. So that's all covered in there. As far as safety goes, when this study came out, I did go to the State Patrol and retrieve a couple years' worth of truck accident reports. And looking through about 150 accident reports, it whittled down to about six trucks that had a permit issued to them for anything that was overweight. Of those six trucks, four of them, I believe, as I recall, four of them, the truck was not at fault, and also four of those trucks were empty at the time of the accident. So there was really only two trucks that was carrying a permit load as far as the weight goes.
Thank you. Are there further questions for Mr. Halverson?
Thank you.
Okay, sure. We have a couple more minutes, so I want to make sure everybody that has a stake in this is...
Mr. Chairman, members
Welcome
of the
back committee. To the committee, Mr. Sulem.
Thank you. For the record, I am Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I appreciate, although we were not part of the negotiations on this, I appreciate the efforts to try to scope it in a little bit clearer, make it a little tighter of a provision than the original language in the bill. I would, however, ask that you consider doing a slight amendment starting in line 2.3. And this issue came up, I don't remember now who raised the confusion, but it talks about the permit holder continues to meet the requirements of a qualifying business. That language actually puts a burden on the local governments as the permit issuers to try to determine are they or are they not still qualified. And I think the clearer language would be to say continues to be designated a qualifying business by the commissioner, because that would put the onus on the permit applicant to say, yes, I am still certified by the commissioner as a qualified business, therefore I can get my permit. And as somebody who has to advise the permit issuers, it would just be a lot cleaner if we could do that approach.
Mr. Sulem, thank you. Can you repeat that? This is actually a something that I flagged as a concern as well. So could you
my
recommendation, is
on line 2.3, starting on line 2.3, where it says holder continues, instead of strike meet the requirements of, and insert, and then on 2.4 qualifying, be a designated qualified business. I guess business is there on 2.4 by the commissioner. In other words, they have to get designated by the commissioner under the provisions on starting in 1.33. Just require that that permit applicant continues to be designated and they can provide proof of their designation. It'll make it a lot easier on the local road authorities to know.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sulem. We're not going to act on this immediately. I wanted to just make sure that we had a general sense of the, if it's not your exact language, we have counsel on both sides that'll figure this out.
Absolutely.
If we go in this direction. So, but I find that very helpful. Do you have any additional comments on the amendment, Mr. Sulem?
Not on the amendment. I'll simply renew my plea from the other night that if you continue to go this route, that any funding in the bill reach all levels of roads and not just some levels.
Okay, right. So that's, okay, good. Always good to repeat. You know, we all learn by repetition. So
got to keep plugging for the client.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we pick it up after 7 repetitions, and we've only gotten to 6. So,
Sutter, I'd be happy to be here as many times as you want me to.
Mr. Sulem, you might have 4 or 5 other chances.
Happy to oblige.
Okay. Is there any additional testimony from the public on the amendment? Well, members, I think you're getting a sense of how important this issue is to many stakeholders around the state. We have a Senate offer in front of us through this amendment, and I think the House will need to discuss this seriously, and we may come back with a counteroffer, Mr. Chairman. At a certain point, we're going to have to come to resolution on this, and I know the Senate feels very strongly, and I know a number of House members feel strongly the other way, but if we can work out a compromise, that would be probably helpful to move this conference committee along. So that's something we'll be considering, Mr. Chairman, as we recess. But it does, Mr. Gordon, do you have any updates about where things are at in terms of our ability to move on here? Should we recess now, in your humble opinion? Okay. I have learned to also rely on Mr. Gordon for many things as well. So, members, there's another group I believe is going to be coming and using this room. So if you have any thing that you don't want potentially others to see, notes, valuables,
it's just gossip.
Tapes. I would gather those up now, but this will be our room for the duration of the day and probably evening. Members can leave certainly your packets you know, again, unless there's anything incriminating in here.
Everything's incriminating.
But we will be in recess to the call of the chair, and I don't really have an estimate, unfortunately, at this point, when we'll be reconvening.
And Mr. Chair, our patient public safety folks, we're going to get to that as soon as we can.
Yeah, members, you know, the roadmap and transit map here is that when we reconvene, we'll, I hope, be able to dispense with the truck weight issue one way or the other. And then we'll move right into public safety provisions. And then after that, I'm hoping we can get to some of the less controversial finance provisions where we have different House and Senate provisions. Those are the three items on the agenda for the remainder of the day. We stand in recess.